Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
We're going to start today with some headlines. Donnie, what's in the news this week?
Last week, there was a press conference called by President Trump's new Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy. And he announced that the administration will be investigating the California High-Speed Rail Authority for potential fraud and misuse of funds. This is not a surprise to anyone who's been watching Trump's comments about the high-speed rail project, not a surprise to basically anyone. A statement from the CEO of the High-Speed Rail Authority, Ian Choudhury, basically said, "We welcome the investigation. We welcome anyone looking in and opening the hood to see if the high-speed rail project has any misuse of funds." This does raise some questions about the future of the project, because if the logical next step is if the federal government finds what they think they're going to find, they're likely going to pull back almost $4 billion of federal grants to the project. The state's going to have to pick up the tab, and I think that's an open question right now.
Yeah. I don't know about mismanagement. Sclerosis probably is likely, having a smoking gun as to fraud. It just seems like it's a complicated project that's beset by things like CEQA and all the different things that a lot of projects deal with.
Yes. In other headlines, Pablo had a story on Friday documenting the first person to bring forward a case to challenge the city of Fresno's sit, lie, sleep ordinance. This is the anti-camping ordinance that the city has on the books that basically criminalizes unhoused people who sleep in public. The man who's challenging it, his name is Wiki Two Hands. He's a 77-year-old man who has been homeless for the last few years. And he says that he was made homeless after living on Motel Drive and some of the motels out there for several years. And then the city ended up converting some of the motels out there to permanent housing, and he got displaced in the process. The court hearing has been postponed to April, but I'd encourage folks to check out that story if they want to learn more about how this ordinance is actually going to get prosecuted.
Has the city commented on that at all?
They can't. They say that they don't comment on active litigation.
Okay. On today's Fresnolandia, we have reporters Omar Rashad and Juliana Morano here with us to talk about some emerging developments in city politics and a special election coming up for Southeast Fresno residents. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Juliana, you are covering the City Council District 5 special election, which covers most of Southeast Fresno. For our listeners who are not familiar, this is the seat that was vacated by Luis Chavez, who was elected to the Fresno County Board of Supervisors in November. Can you give us a little bit of background on each of the four candidates that are vying for his seat?
For sure. Four candidates, like you said. One of them is Elizabeth Jonathan Rosas. She is actually Luis Chavez's wife, and she's one of the four putting her hat in the ring to succeed him on the council. You might recognize her name, though, because she's been a Fresno Unified School Board member since 2016, and she also currently works for Westlands Water District. Another candidate, I'd say Elizabeth Jonathan Rosas and Brandon Vang, another candidate, they've brought in the most campaign contributions so far. A little bit more about Brandon. He also is a school board member in Sanger Unified. He represents the Sunnyside area. And he's currently a stay-at-home dad. He said that he also has a background working in probation. That was in another county, but that's more of his background. Another challenger, Jose Leon Barraza, he is CEO of the Southeast Fresno Economic Development Corporation, but he also has a background in economic development working for the county for over 30 years, the Fresno County, and he also currently sits on the Parks, Recreation, and Arts Commission for the City of Fresno. A fourth challenger named Paul Condon is also in the race. He works in marketing and advertising. And yeah, the three of those four candidates have actually run for the seat previously. Everyone with the exception of Jonathan Rosas have run for the D5 seat before unsuccessfully against Chavez.
What are some of the challenges, if elected, these potential candidates will face? We know about an impending budget deficit that will have to be addressed. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Correct. And Omar will talk about this too, but these council members, or this new council member, will be joining the dais at a time when the city can no longer rely on pandemic-related federal funds that, you know, as Omar's analysis showed, were used to fund personnel in the city. So the city's going to have to figure out a way to maintain those commitments without the help.
The faucet's been turned off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then that council district also largely borders with the potential Southeast Development Area development project. So that council member will be very much tasked with answering the question, should we pursue this Clovis-sized sprawling development or not? Although it is a decision of the entire council, but that's like their area they're representing for the most part.
It was interesting to listen to them talk about that. GVY, our friendly neighborhood development media site, had a forum, and SATA was actually the point where they had a lot of divergence, more than anything else that they discussed, really. They talked about unhoused crisis. They were in alignment around that. They talked about labor agreements. There was some divergence, but SATA was the big area of divergence. I wonder why that is.
Yeah, they disagreed. I was able to include that in our election guide as well, and they have taken different stances. I think the clearest stance is from Leon Barasa. He has said explicitly he opposes SATA and wants the city to invest in its core neighborhoods and its older, aging neighborhoods before it grows any further outward. Brandon Vang, he lives very close to the proposed development area of SATA. So he's talked about believing that is the area where the city should grow. However, he has refused to say if he supports or opposes it. Instead, he said, he's pro-growth, but thinks they should grow smart and not without ensuring that they can attract commercial activity, medical services, and all the things you would need for a community to thrive on the outskirts.
Yeah. Well, and it speaks to their respective positions that they currently play. Barasa runs CIFSEDA, and their main priority has been to shore up older, usually small businesses along the Kings Canyon Ventura corridor. And he's regularly interacting with business owners in that area and seeing what happens when the big boxes move further and further out to the fringe of the city. So it makes sense that he would have that perspective. And then Vang sits on the Sanger Unified board, and Sanger Unified is a big chunk of SATA. It's the southern half of SATA, and then Clovis Unified is the north. So it's not surprising that he would be cautiously optimistic about it. Sanger Unified has already made some big bets about growth in the area and have a new high school, Sanger West, I believe. So their positions make sense when you think about their backgrounds.
And then Jonathan Rosas has also not given an overt stance. When I asked her about it, she said she wanted to wait until the kind of do-over environmental review process was done. She expressed both a need or support for the city growing, but some skepticism about how they would fund infrastructure for a mega development like that.
So can you tell us how this election will work? What percentage of the vote does the winner need to get?
They need to surpass 50% of the vote. If no one receives over 50% of the vote, it will go to a runoff between the top two candidates. And the Fresno city clerk, Todd Sturber, told me that the date they would be eyeing for a runoff election would be in mid-July. Okay.
And ballots are out now. How soon do people have to get their ballots in by?
The election is March 18th.
Okay.
So
has there been any kind of polling? I mean, it's hard to do that soft polling or anything like that.
Not that I know of.
No, usually it's just internal candidate polling.
Okay.
That's
helpful information.
It's a bummer in Fresno we don't have an entity that regularly does non-candidate funded polling. So we never really have that great of polling data in Fresno.
Okay.
I will add, like I said earlier, there is a fourth candidate, Paul Condon. He is one of the ones who has run previously for this seat, but during his 2018 bid, some of his history of multiple women, including family members, seeking restraining orders and being granted restraining orders against him came to light. He also had a very public spat with Luis Chavez, who he was running against in that previous race, where he accused Chavez of threatening his children by going to their school on a Read Across America day. And Chavez, he left allegedly these threatening posts on his Facebook. And so an embattled candidate. He was not invited to the GV Wire forum DeBoer said that was because of the low number of votes he collected during the last election. He placed in fourth during a primary. But he wasn't familiar with SEDA, but he said he has questions about how they would fund infrastructure. And then we also don't have his response to some of the questions that came up at the GVR forum because he wasn't there.
Omar, let's pivot to you. Last week, you dove deeper into the city of Fresno's public safety budget crisis, and we're looking at a $20 million deficit. How did we get here?
So yeah, we're in a really interesting spot for the city, its budget, and how the second half of this decade goes for the city. Essentially, we're at this point where Fresno officials can no longer rely on temporary federal funds to plug budget holes, to expand city departments. And last year they brought up a deficit. They're bringing up a deficit again this year. But I think one key difference is that we have Fresno officials who are talking about perhaps raising taxes as one potential solution to plugging the deficit. Yeah.
And so Mayor Dyer mentioned to you in the story that they're considering this public safety tax. How serious is that in your conversations that you had with Dyer?
Yeah, so I think one key thing is that Mayor Dyer confirmed on the record that he has had preliminary conversations with each city council member about ideas to balance the budget. And among those ideas is essentially raising taxes, either through a general sales tax or a public safety tax.
And let me ask you that, because it was brought up at the public forum, they all pushed for hiring freezes, but that's not going to get us to where we need to be, correct?
Yeah. I think we're at this point where city staff project at least a $20 million deficit. If put into place a hiring freeze, that number isn't going to go down because of a hiring freeze. And if anything, city staff right now are projecting that $20 million deficit figure to only increase in the coming months. And all of this comes on the heels of Mayor Dyer and also the Fresno City Council expanding police and fire dramatically over the last 4 years. Ever since Dyer took office, the police budget grew by at least $70 million. And ever since he took office, the fire department has grown by $52 million. The city used temporary federal funds to expand police and fire, essentially using short-term funds to enter into long-term obligations. And an analogy that I would use is, let's just say your parents are helping you out with 1 year of your car lease. Before entering into a car lease, you got to figure out about those two other years. You can't just rely on that 1 year. And I think if city officials had a very clear plan on how are we going to sustain police and fire expansions, I don't think that the best idea as of right now seems to be discussing raising taxes. And another thing is the mayor stressed that this is just one of many other ideas. Like they're looking into maybe raising, you know, how much money they get from Airbnb and Vrbo and Uber and Lyft. He also mentioned that it's not clear what cuts are going to look like in the coming months, but those conversations are being had. But one thing he did acknowledge was that any revenue from a tax is much different and would make much more of a difference than anything else they currently have on the table in these preliminary conversations about the budget.
And of course, Dyer mentioned to you in the story that they had looked at what Clovis did. It's not the first time on this podcast that we've talked about Fresno looking to Clovis for ideas.
We always look to them for our answers.
What would Clovis do?
Correct.
And so the city of Clovis had a general tax on the ballot last November. It passed with a majority of support. Do we think they're going to follow that Clovis blueprint of a general tax that's earmarked for maybe public safety? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no. So the mayor didn't go into precise detail about how much would the tax be, or would it be a specific tax or a general tax? But I can say that on the table right now, just in terms of exploring options, the mayor said that it could be a general sales tax. It could be a specific public safety tax. And I imagine over the next few months, that'll get hammered out. Yeah.
And just so our listeners know, a general tax means that you can't earmark the funds for specific uses. It goes into your general fund, but it also means that there's a lower voter threshold. So you only have to have a majority over 50% of the electorate has to support it. Where special taxes require two-thirds support, a supermajority, or over 66.67%. So there's always a debate when PACs get brought into the mix of do we want to do a general tax? Do we want to do a special tax? So Clovis's tax was a general tax. And I would say also in the mix, we've been reporting on Measure C in Fresno County for the last few years. That is also planning on being on the ballot in November of 2026. So we have a lot of taxes that are going to be in the mix over the next several months to figure out.
Historically, Donnie, has Fresno tended to move in the direction of a general or a special tax to address budgetary issues?
I have never in my almost two decades of working close to city issues in Fresno, I've never seen a general tax floated in Fresno that's been serious. So before I became a journalist, I was involved in Measure P. And during the Measure P incubation days, there was a discussion of making that into a general tax. And it ultimately didn't get through because there was such a commitment by a lot of community groups to really make sure that parks were a priority. And the thing about a general tax is you can't say 50% is going to be for building new parks or 50% is going to be for hiring new cops. You're really just saying we're passing it and public safety might be in the mix, but no promises, voters. You're subject to the winds of whatever the city council wants to decide to spend it on. So there's a quote in a story we did about Clovis's general tax from November. Omar and I, it's a funny quote from city council member Drew Bressinger, who, you know, I was asking him this question about, hey, you know, in Clovis, you guys are calling this a public safety tax, but really, if you guys wanted to, it's a general tax. You could spend it on homelessness if you wanted.
Yeah.
And I believe he said something to the effect of, if we do that, the voters better take us out to the woodshed.
Which is a dramatic thing to say. Just the implications are very interesting.
Yeah. I'm not sure how that would work in reality. But just to say, he's saying, yes, it's a general tax, but people know us in Clovis. We love our cops. We would never spend it on anything else. Yeah. But
And just at the core of this is really a question for every Fresno resident. Do you think right now it's fair for city officials to raise taxes, to essentially ask for more money from residents after they essentially jumped into long-term financial obligations using temporary funds? And yeah, I think that's really the core of this. And are Fresno residents maybe palatable to a public safety tax or general sales tax?
I remember I did a number of interviews with elected officials in Fresno where I asked them to explain to me how their metric or their rubric for thinking about police numbers, fire numbers. And the answers were not complete avoidance, but close to it. And it was the response I typically got was just spend more. Mm-hmm. We need more. It's just always more. It's just always more. And my persistent question was like, what's the right number and how do you know if you've arrived there? And so I think that's how you get into these budgetary situations.
And I know that Mayor Dyer, as many elected officials in Fresno do, campaign on this, I'm going to hire more police officers. And I want to say that he campaigned on getting to 1,000 police officers in Fresno, which I believe there's some number that I'm actually surprised that people didn't give you a number, because I know there is some number that I have heard people use to tie that to, like, you're supposed to have this many police officers per capita.
Yeah, but where does that number come from?
Of course.
Convoluted, right?
Methodology questions, et cetera. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, in something we've been wanting to look into is to just see how the size of the police force correlates with safety numbers. I think that's an open question that criminology experts have.
Yeah, and the one thing that gets talked about a lot is that 2020 and 2021 were years where across the nation, police departments were grappling with increase in murders, increase in violent crime. And I think what we hear right now from public officials is that crime is going down, which means our increased investments in police and fire have paid off. But I think it's just important for the context. Crime has gone down since 2020 for practically every city. And anyone who is looking at crime statistics on a regional, national level is able to see that crime is going down across the board. It's not specific to any region. And 2020 was a big year that brought record levels of violent crime to different cities. Yeah. Yeah.
Correlation and causation.
Yep.
And people aren't campaigning right now on adding more police, but when I asked them for a guide about what are areas they'd fight to protect during a shortfall, pretty much all of them said they don't want any cuts to public safety, meaning police and fire ranks. So they'll have to figure out how to do that if they do join the council. Also, Elizabeth Jonathan Rosas was the only candidate who said she would support a specifically a public safety tax, but not a general tax.
Oh, interesting.
During GBWAR's forum.
Interesting. Does her campaign get any funds from related entities?
Her largest single donation she's received is from the police union in the amount of $10,900. She's also endorsed by the firefighters union, I believe.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah. Happy to.
We're going to conclude this podcast with our favorite segment, which is what we're loving this week. We'll start with our guests. Omar, what are you loving this week?
So for $6, you can go over to this place called Sweet Mango, and you can get 2 shrimp spring rolls. It comes with a peanut sauce, and also I would say it's like a maybe sweet and sour, hot and spicy. I can't remember at the moment, but like it comes with 2 sauces. If you don't want to have a full lunch, and you want to spend a few bucks on a nice little snack, lighten up your day. I did that today, actually. So
I've been influenced. Congratulations.
Yay.
I have not been. Where is this?
It is, let me pull up the cross streets.
General area of town.
Yeah. Rob took us. I think we tried it at the same time, and it was revolutionary.
Yeah, I think I was stammering at one point.
I've heard other people talk about it. So
it's a great spot. You can get pad thai. If you are interested in an actual lunch, they also do that, not just snacks. But Sweet Mango, it's on First in Hammond.
Mm. I love places that have array of options, like Fresno Bagel. You can get curry.
or
a bagel first thing in the morning. Yes.
Great.
I had a big hot bowl of panna and curry in there while I also double fisted a bagel. Wow. I just love a place that has an array of options. Don't you, Donnie?
I mean, you could also say that about Cheesecake Factory.
Oh, God. Okay. That's not the direction. Juliana, save us. What are you loving this week?
So what I'm loving right now is a book recommendation from my friend who loves reading and also specifically loves going through the Man Booker Prize shortlist. And his favorite book on that list was a book called My Friends by Hisham Motter. Incredible book about, loosely based on the events of the author's life. And he's writing about exile from his native country of Libya through a fictional character, but also focusing on life-changing friendships with friends of his who are also living in exile.
Fascinating. Donnie, what are you loving this week?
Okay, listeners to this podcast may know that I don't get out very often, but I did go out this weekend and I went to a fundraiser for the Central Valley Justice Coalition, who does great work around human trafficking in Fresno. But one of the highlights for me was it was a mini golf fundraiser.
Oh my God. How'd you do?
Horrible. But it doesn't matter because you have a little club and you just get to whack things. And so after a really exhausting, intense week, Friday night, I just had a club and I got to hit balls.
Maybe you should lean into this. Maybe Fresno has a rage room where you can hit stuff. I found that therapeutic.
I live really close to Bad Axe, but I've never been. It seems too dangerous.
Yeah, I'd be scared with an axe in my hands too.
Yeah, I'm not going. I've heard the rage room is very good. But anyways, it was a lovely time, I guess all of that to say. And I did horribly.
It's been a long time since I played mini golf. How about you two?
Haven't dabbled myself.
Never played mini golf.
Yeah, the opportunity just hasn't presented itself.
Staff retreat to the mini golf course.
I would like to put in some suggestions besides mini golf. I just want to put that on the table, just so everyone knows.
I've played, and theoretically I should be good because I used to play hockey, but I'm not. I'm bad.
You used to play hockey?
Yeah.
She's from Michigan.
There's supposed to be a correlation with that and golf, but not for me at least.
I want to see Juliana with a bunch of pads on.
It's another cathartic sport. Donnie, you can explore it.
I need more cathartic sports in my life, I think.
So I'm loving 2 things this week. The first, this is not about to turn to a therapy session, but is it's a book called Fight Right, How Successful Couples Turn Conflict into Connection. And it's written by this couple, this amazing couple. I don't know if you've all heard of them. The Gottmans, Julie and John Gottman.
I have heard of them.
They're incredible. So John Gottman's famous for being able to watch, I don't know if it's like about I think something in the range of 5 minutes of a couple talking to each other, and he can determine with a 93% accuracy rate whether they'll get divorced in the next few years. He's worked really hard on unpacking what it is about language and how we talk to each other. So anyway, so I got this book, and what it does, and I think this is helpful for anyone in long-term relationships, it looks at the three different conflict styles. You have the avoidant, the validating, and the volatile. And he shows how they intersect and interact. And I just found it really interesting beyond just like a relationship context, just like thinking about conflict, which is something we all have to deal with. The other thing I'm loving this week is a random movie that I watched that was on my list for a long time. It's called A Touch of Sin. It came out in 2013, and it's four vignettes in China of different kind of crimes that happened during China's economic expansion. And it was so beautiful, so fascinating, and so bloody. And I was here for it. I feel like I don't see enough China when I watch film, or I feel like I just have an impoverished understanding of all the different regions and locales and cultures that exist in China. And so it was a fascinating kind of little picture into the society. Obviously, it's, you know, more than 10 years old now, but it's a fascinating watch. So that's what we're loving this week. This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.